The 50 States Challenge, you laid siege to Nevada, mm-hmm. and we got
brute force.
We got it, brute force. And then you know what? I'll say we actually got a few in there. So that was good. And now as it stands, we still have 13 more states to go.
Can you run them down for me real quick?
I would be more than happy to. So we got North Dakota, South Dakota.
The Dakotas. Uh-huh. Those are going to be hard because low population in general.
Yep.
And then of that population, I'm going to say low Twitter users per capita.
Yeah. That's yeah. It's hard to know. I mean, I just don't know anyone out there. I don't want to stereotype, but you know, it's a whole deal out there. Then we got Kansas. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about Kansas. We got Oklahoma. I know some people in Oklahoma, but I don't think I'm really as podcast people, so I don't know. You get your New Mexico. I reached out to somebody in New Mexico.
We can lock down New Mexico for sure.
Oh, hey, you know what? Since looking at the map last, we have gotten Arkansas. So
we do not have
13.
Arkansas.
Yeah. Then we got Mississippi.
Am I
hard to know about Mississippi. We got Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
Two I's.
We got Delaware, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So we got Arkansas. That's a big one. We got 12 left. So you're going to go get New Mexico, Connecticut.
Oh, and we heard from Windows Phone Guy.
We found out who the Windows Phone Guy was.
Yeah. Send us
friend of the show, Dan Heckman.
Yep, the man himself.
I feel like we should do something at some point where we do a live stream Twitch thing or something.
We should definitely do something at some point.
Yeah, there's no disputing that.
Yeah, and I'll be around when I get back for sure. No, dude, that your cousin Aaron Bell's his poem "Down to Chill," which I believe is a transcription of a text message conversation the two of you had, has taken on a life of its own among my Baltimore friend group. My friend Noah and I all the time say, "I'll be around when I get back for sure," which is a line from that.
Yeah, this is a great one.
Oh, man, it's so great. He probably listens to the show. What's up, Aaron Bells? I've admired you from afar. Your tweets are pretty good. You're a good tweeter.
He's a good tweeter. He takes long breaks from Twitter. You know, one time he got into a Twitter fight with Patton Oswalt, and I think that kind of left a few scars.
Yeah, but you should have seen the other guy.
I always want to just keep on adding more sections to this thing. I'm like, yeah, we should have a little section here where we talk about something some piece of media that we liked in the past 2 weeks. No, we should have another section where we just do the 50 States Challenge and another section where we talk about buzzwords.
I think, you know, here's what I think we do. I think we do a sort of a Sesame Street-esque thing at the end where we say, this episode was brought to you by the state of Connecticut, the buzzword collaboration, and... You know, we just break.
What's
it.
Our third thing?
I don't know.
Is our third thing a piece of media that we liked?
No. Yeah, and our three picks for the week. John, what are your three picks for the week?
So this episode is brought to you by the state of Arkansas, and also Shark Tank, and also Aaron Bells' poetry, which you should go look up.
I'm going to give you the deal. I'm going to give you $150,000, but I'm going to give it to you as debt, and I want 7% equity because I bring a lot of value.
I'll do you one better. He's going to take equity. I'm going to put $100,000 in. I want a royalty. I want a 2-cent royalty on every single unit sold. Until I get four times my money, then I'm going to dial it back to a 1-cent royalty.
I'm Mark Cuban. I'm not going to offer you a deal, but I am going to tell you you're stupid if you take his deal.
The best subplot of that show that no one talks about is that Mark Cuban is worth more of all of the rest of them put together.
No, the best subplot of that show is that Robert Hershevek is like such a sweetheart.
He's a real sweetheart.
Oh, I just want to
give him
a hug.
You bring a puppy out there, he can't control himself.
Anything cute really pushes that guy's buttons.
I like Barbara.
Yeah, I like Barbara too. I feel like Barbara's got some fire in her belly. But yeah. Robert Hershevek just has those twinkly eyes, man. He's a real sweetheart.
Yeah, he is. He's handsome too.
Ah, what a handsome man.
Hello?
Hello?
What's up, brother?
Let's talk about fits and starts.
Fits and starts is about people our age talking about work.
Fits and starts is highly specific, but highly specific in the things I'm interested in.
The things that I like.
I think that I didn't fall asleep.
Conversations that you guys have are like real life conversations. If you were like sitting in my living room, so keep up that good work.
Like podcasting, honey.
But ding!
There's really only one thing I don't like.
Mic problems.
Not often you get to hear two white dudes give their opinions on annoying bros, but not annoying.
Like, no, you know what fits and starts is like?
Fits and starts. Fits and starts.
Fits and starts is a morale booster. That's absolutely what it is.
This week, we talk about personality types and whether your personality should determine your career path. Then things get a little off the rails when we talk about the Marines, ladder climbing, and then Daniel makes a big life announcement. As always, we really appreciate you listening to the show. If you enjoy it, it'd be really helpful if you recommended it to a friend.
So this is almost a topic. So I'm just going to go ahead and open with that right now. This
really is, sell the listeners hard.
I'm going to sell the listeners. What we have here is almost a topic and is almost an ad for a website.
Oh, boy.
Except they're not paying us.
Oh, is this our first sponsor?
It's our first sponsor. We'll bill you later.
Yeah.
16 personalities. So at work, we no one asked us to do this. We just sort of spontaneously all took personality tests. I have taken several like Myers-Briggs-y type of personality tests before, and this one was the best so far. Just in the sense of it was the most well-designed website, it was the most enjoyable to take. Then they had this really good copy written for each personality type at the end. Like, after they give you your personality type, they had some like really interesting copy and some like really kind of eerily, creepily predictive stuff, for me at least. I don't know. I'm interested to hear if you had a similar experience or not.
Yeah, maybe we should back up just a little bit just to kind of like, in case anyone's not familiar with the Myers-Briggs test or hasn't taken one before, the conceit of it is it's this personality test that came out of like the 40s and 50s, kind of the background and like trying to identify different types of personality based on four different traits where you can be on different ends of a spectrum on those four different traits. And this test has existed for a while, and it's sort of a helpful categorization to quickly like kind of put people into different boxes. I didn't mean to say that in like necessarily a negative way.
No. It's like a really good way to like not have to get to know people, but just feel like you understand yeah. them from like a assets perspective.
Right. In some ways, like, so when I first started getting into it, the thing that I got really into, which I thought was really fun, was like once I kind of felt like I understood those four different traits, or I guess it's eight different traits that are each, you know, different end of the spectrum, trying to predict what other people are, and it's actually surprisingly easy to do that, to kind of like guess what other people are. But I got really into it, and then the part that I think we're going to get into is once you take a test like this, it's easy to start to let that become sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy for how you behave and how you think about your own life and your activity and your relationships to other people and your relationships to your work. And there's a little bit of like, it's a little bit like, you know, oh, this is my zodiac sign, so therefore these daily predictions are correct. And that's the part that I'm a little wary of.
Wait, you have daily predictions? There's a horoscope for the Myers-Briggs test?
No, just that.
Oh, there is now.
Yeah. Oh, hey, this is our big idea. This is the nug that we've been looking for all this time.
Oh, man.
Well, and so the first part of it is, which is just like, my first gripe is just like, there are obviously way more than 16 types of people. Second gripe is like, I do think there's like, you can't let this get too much into your head, because I think you're a lot bigger than the box that this puts you in as a person. And I also have found that when I take tests online or take these little diagnostic things, like it can differ dramatically based on like what time of day it is, like what type of day I'm having, whether or not I've had like a good breakfast, you know, all these different things can really sway my results, depending on like when I take it and how reasonable I'm feeling.
I think I have previously, I think a lot less so now, but still definitely to some extent, like a fear of being found out or understood. You know, I like to be somewhat enigmatic. I don't want to be totally grokked by anyone. I want to be, you know, constantly whipping out surprises on people like we addressed.
It's one of your core competencies.
One of my core competencies. And so the idea that like someone's going to like hand me, you know, like a PDF that's going to describe me is incredibly upsetting to my sort of natural way of things. And so in the past, whenever anyone asked me to take one of these personality tests, I thought to myself, get out of here with this. And I took this one because I was mostly because I was attracted by the design of the website and other people I worked with were taking it. However, I was shocked and amazed because I've had this experience before with other reading that described sort of types of people where I felt like there are things that I have never like said out loud to anyone about like the way that I operate that were like captured very beautifully and succinctly in this writing.
Can I guess what you are?
Go ahead.
I think that you are ENTP.
So interesting. The previous two times I had taken this, I was ENTP. This time I am ENFP by a margin of 3% on the F.
Okay.
So I'm close to ENTP, but I'm slightly swayed to the F. And I think that the couple of interesting little excerpts here. They tend to see life as a big complex puzzle where everything is connected, but unlike analysts who tend to see that puzzle as a series of systemic machinations, ENFPs see it through a prism of emotion, compassion, and mysticism, and are always looking for a deeper meaning. This is definitely true of me, and this is like one of the weird things that I have felt separated me from people who I felt otherwise similar to in lots of situations, was that they're like these very like smart analytical people who saw the world as like a complex machine, but did not connect to that complex machine on a emotional or mystical level, with the exception of sort of like deeply religious people. And even there, I often felt like they weren't connecting with it on a mystical level. They were just sort of making that also analytical. But I feel like that I have like weird, I don't know. I have like a deep attraction to sort of like mysticism in general.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I definitely see that in like very like not traditionally mystical places, like very like engineering. Like I see mysticism in engineering problems a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I thought that was like a very interesting little thing that they hit. Luckily, ENFPs know how to relax and are perfectly capable of switching from passionate, driven idealist in the workplace to that imaginative and enthusiastic free spirit on the dance floor, often with a suddenness that can surprise even their closest friends. Being in the mix also gives them a chance to connect emotionally with others, giving them the cherished insight into what motivates their friends and colleagues. They believe that everyone should take time to recognize and express their feelings, and their empathy and sociability make that a natural conversation topic. I sort of read between the lines on this one. I am very good at switching from work to relaxation and back, like context switching, and like turning off work and turning on relaxation is something that I am capable of doing fairly easily. And also like the desire for other people to express their emotions more is definitely something that I'm into.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what your results were.
Would you like to guess?
I think you're an INTP.
Close. The one that I typically swing the most on is between F and T, between the thinking and the feeling. This one, I came out pretty far on the F. So I am INFJ.
INFJ. Okay.
And depending on the time of day, INTJ.
Okay.
And I am closer to the extroverted side. It depends on the test that I take, but this test had me within 3% of the extroverted side.
Yeah.
I think I am actually a little further away than that. That's an interesting one because I enjoy talking to people and enjoy kind of getting stuff out there and like chewing on big ideas with people. I thought that meant that I was extroverted. I didn't learn really until my adult life that I'm pretty introverted. And after I talk to people, like after I record this podcast, I go and kind of like hibernate for quite a while.
I'm going to assume that introversion versus extroversion for you is probably a moral issue. So you should probably work on that, I guess.
Or something. So the thing about Myers-Briggs is that there's a right and a wrong on every spectrum. I'm on the right.
Yeah. What is the name of your... What is like the cutesy name that they gave your guy?
I am the advocate.
The advocate? Cool. I'm the campaigner. So we're both like out there, like, you know, doing it.
This tells me that Alanis Morissette is one of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have, who do I got? I got Will Smith. He's a Scientologist.
I also have Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, and Martin Luther King. But yeah. You know.
Robert Downey Jr., Robin Williams, Drew Barrymore. This tells me that I will be good at technology related like engineering things, but really only as a way to suss out the way that people work.
Well, how about this as a tagline for our TV or for the description for the podcast? This is in mine. Advocates for the INFJ have an inborn sense of idealism and morality, but what sets them apart is not their idle, is that they are idle dreamers, but people capable of taking concrete steps to realize their goals and make a lasting positive impact.
Heard.
That's like what the entire show is about.
Yep, and mine is ENFPs are fiercely independent and much more than stability and security. They value and crave creativity and freedom.
Yeah, there you go.
That is what this podcast is about.
It sounds like you're using a sock. I can't say whether or not it sounds like you're using too much of a sock.
The ego part of you, right, that is you and lives behind your eyes, isn't all that there is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
Have you ever heard of a phenomenon called depersonalization or derealization?
Or it could be that you're a spiritual being in a material world.
That is also true. My microphone stand today is in order Dante's Inferno, followed by The Grapes of Wrath.
Gotcha.
Followed by 101 Dalmatians on VHS.
That's correct.
Followed by Babe on VHS.
Babe? Do you have Babe 2?
I do not have Babe 2, but this is kind of a recurring thing on here.
Yeah. Well, that was peer-reviewed.
It was peer-reviewed. And then finally, the underneath all of it is the my Uncle Rudy's copy of the NIV Bible. Mm. So it's, you know, kind of an eclectic but informative bunch of media right here.
Yeah, no, that's kind of your whole stack.
Any given person has a bunch of blind spots and has a whole bunch of things that they're not good at. And my question is like how you decide how to approach that. And it seems like there's a couple different ways you could approach that, which is like to either become a generalist or a specialist. And there are certain things like for me that I've got all sorts of shortcomings. Like a good example though for me is like design. Like, I don't know how to design anything. I don't know how to make anything look good. And when I think about that, it's hard to figure out like how much time I should put into being less terrible at design, and how much I should just think, just assume that like in any organization I go to, there are going to be other people who are good at that and I'll never have to worry about it. Or should I have like an elementary vocabulary of like design and how it works and what makes good design and what makes bad design so that I can like speak that language a little bit? And it does seem to get into this broader question of like, should you be a little bit good at a bunch of stuff, or should you just take the thing that you are good at and spend 20 years becoming phenomenal at it and have that be your career? And that's kind of it's a hard question to ask. And I don't feel like I have a really good answer for it or a really good approach for it right now, because I'm in this place where I feel like I'm okay at like five things, and not great at anything, and like barely knowledgeable about like a couple dozen other things. And it's hard for me to decide, like, should I just trim a bunch of those off and try to develop an area of expertise, or should I remain a generalist because that like would maybe make me like a more versatile person? I don't know. Have you thought much about this? And then I'm interested to tie it back in with the personality types thing, because I think there's a lot of things about that, like what I was getting at with pretending to be somebody or pretending to kind of have a skill that you don't. Like, when I'm in a networking event, pretending to be extroverted to go do the networking thing or the sales thing or whatever, when that's not really who I am, should we stick to the stuff that we think comes naturally to us? How far should we push ourselves to go do things that are unnatural for us? And how do you approach that decision-making process, especially with respect to your career?
Totally. I want to relate this a little bit to, I don't ever remember if we made this a full topic, but it's something that's been in our topic board, which is the idea that your brain is an operating system.
Oh yeah, I love thinking about that.
I remember last episode, we were talking about planning our lives around not using iCloud, because it's unreliable, and we enjoy the Apple iOS mobile operating system, and we depend on some of its features and some of its app ecosystem related things and stuff to such an extent that we are willing to basically work around one of its major deficiencies to be able to remain in the fold. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
I think it's very similar, right? So it's like, if my brain's an operating system, there are certain things where it's like, this is just a feature that my operating system just doesn't have a good implementation of this feature, right? And it's possible that maybe later in a software update, there'll be a patch that, gives us a better implementation of this feature. Often, what I found is that if you live your life depending on the fact that Apple's going to push down a software update and fix your pet bug, it will never happen, right? And right. So I think, spending your life looking for the hack, or, spending your life looking for like the one way that I'm going to make myself more of this type of person that I'm not, it's much easier for me to design my life around what I have available to me, and then focus my efforts on the places where like my strengths meet the required tasks, than it is to spend a lot of time trying to like buff out those edge cases.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Another thing that I'm terrible at is details. Like, going through a process and kind of like following the appropriate steps and being methodical and actually like getting to the right details in any given project and like doing something on a repetitive basis and not screwing it up and not taking shortcuts. That's something that like, it goes so like harshly against my personality that I make mistakes every single time. And I'm wondering about that. Like, so that's a bug in my software. So then do I try to come up with a bunch of little hacks to try to suddenly become a detail-oriented person? Or do I just say, okay, I know that about myself, and so therefore I should always try to work with teams that are detail-oriented so that like my butt is covered on that? What is what's the best hack there? Because it seems like you're saying, waiting forever to say, gee, I sure hope I someday become detail-oriented and good at that, that doesn't seem like the most like efficient approach.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it is. So I had a boss one time who called it the idiot check, right? Which is like, you've done the job, right? And now you just do a quick little recap to make sure you're not an idiot, right? And like to find all of those little things, like when I think that the job is done, you know, I'm not super great at like putting that extra little 5% of polish on top of it, you know, which is all detail work, you know, that stuff is all detail work. Cause like in my mind, like the task I was actually solving was to like solve this big problem, you know, and sometimes that wasn't actually what I was tasked with. What I was tasked with was to like to deliver a completed thing, you know?
Yep.
And so I deliver 95% of something. And then there's a bunch of like, hey, can you alphabetize these lines, please? And I was like, oh, yeah, duh. Like, you always ask me to alphabetize the lines. Of course you want me to alphabetize the lines. I know you want me to alphabetize the lines. Yet somehow these lines are not alphabetized, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And like, I thought I was done, but I wasn't done, you know?
Yep.
And so it's like, what do I do about that? Because it's much more conducive to me to like build systems that make it difficult for that to get to that state.
Right. So you'd rather build a system that's idiot proof than to have like a pilot's checklist for each process that you do.
Totally. And like I am an idiot, right? And this is like the thing that I'm dealing with my brain all the time, is that like my brain is so bad at reminding me to do things, you know? It's just like insanely bad at it. And there are so many things that, and like, you know, this is, I don't want to get too like getting things done on this, but like there's so many things that like I still to this day will ask my brain to remind me to do later, and it won't. And that thing just won't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's what like I know. And again, it's hard not to touch on the getting things done side of things. For anyone who hasn't read, is the famous book by David Allen in the 1980s that Merlin Mann then updated 20, 30 years later. That's phenomenal. And it's all about, you know, unless it's a thought that you really enjoy having, you shouldn't have it more than, only a crazy person would want to have that thought more than once. So when you think, boy, I really got to go take the trash out on Tuesday, you should put that somewhere that will remind you of that before Tuesday, and so that you can stop thinking about it. The point is not to be anal retentive. The point is that you can get it out of your brain and stop being an anxious mess about your trash.
Sure. I've put myself in a position now where like, the job I have is so much more structured around the way I think, you know? Mm. And like the people I work with are all very like capture oriented. The one thing I really like about working remotely is that no one ever walks up to me, taps me on the shoulder and says, can you do this thing, and walks away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Everything that comes into me comes in text. And so if I forget, I can go
with time code too.
Yeah. I can go back and find it, right?
Yeah, it's really helpful. Like the combination of like calendars and OmniFocus and reminders have really actually helped me cover my butt on this, because now I was joking earlier about the pilot's checklist, but like I have sort of turned my life into a bunch of pilot checklists because I have to. I have this meticulous calendar and this meticulous checklist, and everything that I do is like repeatable. And there's subtasks for everything. And, a whole bunch of repeating things that show up every week. Like I have, you know, just clean up my desktop once a week, and I have to do it, and I have to come into the fits and starts Trello board once a week and clean everything up and look, just at least glance at every card and edit and, you know, remind myself to go and work on music for half an hour and turn off the internet and, you know, whatever else. Without this, I don't get a single thing done. And that's for the, that I've had to go to that extreme because I think I'm basically a dysfunctional person without it. But I don't know. Do you find yourself going to those sorts of extremes?
So this is kind of a question I have, and this, you know, this is really something that like weighs on the rest of my career, right? Is like, am I going to go the direction of solving for those shortcomings in, 'cause I'm in a position that, you know, it does require those types of things. You know, I actually just thought of this in the car today on the way to record this podcast, that I am like, I'm very much like a self-starter, but I'm not really a self-finisher, you know? Like,
would you say that you work in fits and starts?
I do. Fits and starts and not a lot of fits and finishes, you know?
Yeah.
And like, right. Am I going to like develop more and more sort of like fiddly, checklisty type of things that are going to like remind me and like sort of solve for these shortcomings? Or am I going to like sort of direct my career more down the road of, you know, if I look at this like personality thing that I just took, right? Like, am I going to direct my career more down the road of like leaning more into people, you know, and, less into sort of like task completion?
Hello.
You want to run it back real quick? Double your money and make a stack real quick?
Oh, hello.
Yeah, so that is our topics for the next year. So tune in for more of this. We're gonna do one buzzword per episode. We'll do 30 yeah. seconds on it.
There was a period where you used to only get haircuts on the solstice.
I tell my haircutter every time they cut my hair. I told the lady today as she was cutting my hair about that.
Was she bemused?
Yeah, they always look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah, that's their fault. They're the crazy ones. I think we decided it was Nevada. Or no, we decided it was Nevada.
That's the issue,
it's
right?
It's hard to say. It's really hard to say.
Mm. PewDiePie! Yeah.
That guy's such a goof.
What a goon.
She told me this whole story. She said, you know, just imagine... that this knight is married to some woman named Val, and he gets stabbed, and then he looks up at her and he says with his last dying breath, "Me die, Val." And I'll never forget how to spell medieval. It's an interesting, it's sort of even like a trope that people talk about in the business community is the idea that if you become very good at something, you get sort of like promoted into a management position where you're no longer doing the thing that you're good at. Yeah. And then you're asked to go be a manager, which is a crazy thing because like being in middle management is like this sort of like unglamorous job that is hard to be good at. And it's kind of a funny thought to think about, like taking a programmer who's really good and then putting them in charge of a bunch of other people and saying, okay, now go exercise this other skill set that you might not have yet, you know, have fun, and don't write code anymore. And usually I think of that in sort of like a tragic way, but when you frame it up the way you just framed it up, it actually sounds really quite nice, kind of beautiful. It's like this that you get to then go and do this very human side of it, which is a lot like mentorship, and when you put it in that light, that actually sounds like kind of a nice thing.
So there's no old junkies, right? Like, they just die, right?
It just got dark really fast.
They either die or they stop being junkies, right? In the same way, I think there are very few old, like, hardcore programmers.
Unless you're in NASA.
Yeah, exactly. They either stop being programmers and start being bureaucrats, or like some sort of other administrative worker, right? Or they transcend the like day-to-day writing of code. Their experience becomes more valuable than them sitting around writing code 40 to 60 hours a week, you know?
Right, right.
From where I was at Polymath, I could have gone a few directions. I could have gone like deep into the project management world, you know? I could have like gone and gotten like a Scrum Master certification and like, you know, like run agile project teams, you know? And like been like a technical project manager who like understood code and could speak the language and was like making tickets and getting estimates and doing the whole damn thing, right? Talking story points.
Sure.
And I really like Agile and like I think I would have had a good time with that. But I really didn't want to like not be a programmer anymore, you know? Like I like being a programmer. Like if you want to be a junior developer, then a senior developer, then what? Right? Like that's the direction I would rather go, is the like sort of engineering like educating newer developers and then like simultaneously like doing a little bit of project management and stuff like that, but like mostly like dealing with people and code, you know? And just like as the balance shifts, dealing more and more with people than with code, but like never losing visibility into the code, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like, ideally, I think like that's where I end up when I'm like in my 40s, you know?
Interesting. Have you ever heard that phrase promoted to the level of your own incompetence? I kept on thinking about that in the, and during that last section. Have you ever heard that?
Promoted to the level of your own incompetence?
I heard it from Max Temkin, but apparently it's just that the phenomenon of like, if you are a good junior developer and then you're a good senior developer and then you are a good enough senior developer that you get promoted to VP of engineering.
Oh, they'll just keep promoting you till you're eventually bad at a job.
Yeah. And so then when, let's say you get to VP of engineering and you're not a very good VP of engineering, so then you don't get promoted to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just remain a bad VP of engineering for 10 years.
That's amazing.
Which like is a very real phenomenon that exists. But it is like, how are you supposed to work around that? You know? So the idea is like, once someone is stagnant, it's like, and it's a real thing in the military, is the military, at least in the Marine Corps, I don't really know that much about it, but I was talking to about this.
So many bad colonels.
The idea in the Marine Corps is you move up or you move out. And if you go up to a rank and then don't get promoted within 2 years, you're done. Which I think is actually a very, very smart idea.
So is that really a thing?
Oh yeah, it's a real thing. And that's what so when he was in college, he kind of like stagnated in the military for a while and stayed in there because they were writing him good checks and they paid for his school. And he was like a colonel or something. He had done well and was like getting paid well, and then was sort of just taking it easy while he did school. And they eventually like wrote him a letter and were like, your 2.5 years are up. Like, clearly you're not trying for the next position. No one has offered you the next position, which means you're either stagnating or you've like, you're not as passionate as you used to be or whatever it means. Like, it doesn't mean anything good. So like, you can no longer be a colonel because you're not moving up.
Wow. So then what, do they demote you?
I think he's just done.
They're just like, he's like, here's your pat on the back and your pension.
Yeah. Like honorable discharge.
Huh?
I could be, hey, listeners, please let us know. I could be so wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure I was understanding him correctly. Like, that's the way the military operates, and part of me thinks that that's actually really smart.
I'm going to talk to my new brother-in-law, Alex, who is marrying my sister. Everyone's engaged right now, but my sister just got engaged to this guy, Alex, who is like deeply embedded in like a... going to be, well, is now in the military, but going to be like an officer at some point type of
congratulations listener Alex.
I don't believe he's a listener.
I'm just gonna keep going with this bit until you don't call me out.
But sometimes you say listener and they are a listener and then I don't call you out. I think this is gonna, maybe I should just have a more subtle single a subtle signal.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is that, you know, podcasts are timeless, and so, like, eventually he might be a listener.
That's true. Maybe he'll, yeah, and he'll go back through the episodes, and he'll be like, oh my God, they called me out 2 years ago.
Anyway, that's great. Promoted to your own incompetence. I think about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I wonder about that a lot, and I think that there's something to be said for that idea.
Yeah, I think we might want to implement a policy like that for our listeners.
Oh, you move up your yeah. So, what's the first level? Is like if you're a private, you're kind of just checking it out.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
you
yeah.
haven't subscribed
well,
yet.
Well, based on our analytics, what it seems like is if you're a private, you listen to the latest episode and then the first episode. Because yeah. that is what our analytics suggest, that everyone listens to episode zero, which is
yeah.
kind of a shame because it's not the greatest episode.
Not a great episode.
I'm going to go ahead and suggest if you're checking out this latest episode for the first try, I really like Five Jobs and a Bunch of Dog Whistles. Mm-hmm. What was the other one that was really popular?
Closing the Gap.
Closing the Gap was also very popular. So those two, go check those ones out. The Five Jobs one wasn't as popular, but it's my favorite. So don't go listen to episode zero as like your second episode, because that's really going to spoil your supper.
And jam you up.
But yeah, so that's level one. Then level two is you've listened to them all and you've subscribed.
Yeah.
Go ahead and move on up. Level three, maybe you like our tweet when we post the new episode.
Which level is the one where the Thetans come in?
You have to pay a lot for that.
Right.
That's our gold level of sponsorship.
A gold premium yep. yeah, executive package.
Yeah, no, this episode is brought to you by the Thetans. So if you got that, that's good. And then so you like our tweet, then maybe you retweet our tweet. Then maybe you actually might tweet at us in response. We've got listener Grant, who is commonly doing that. And then also,
yeah, really coming after me.
Listener John Boy Schimpf. Listener John Boy Schimpf is really heavy on the engagement as well. He seems pretty cynical about the whole thing, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. You know, he was really into it. He was really complimentary. And then, on the latest one, he turned on us.
Yeah. It might be about time for him to get out. I don't know if he's getting up any further.
Yeah. You know what? Well, he's not moving up. He's got a bad attitude. He said he doesn't want to hear you say the word Laravel again. He said it's a word he doesn't like and he's tired of hearing it.
Yeah. Well, I also technically pronounce it wrong. According to its creator, Taylor Otwell, it's actually Laravel, and it rhymes with Care Paravel from the Narnia books.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You're telling me.
Who's our best listener? Have we given out any trophies for this?
Our best listener?
Yeah.
Oh man, listener of the week. You know what? I'm of the dog training methodology that says you reward the good behavior and you ignore the bad.
Yes.
So I'm gonna go ahead and give this one to listener John Schimpf for his his constant engagement. And we're gonna see if he can he can learn to lay down.
Thank you, listener John.
Roll over. I was listening to your music, your old's music today, and there was
oh, yeah?
there were some draggy hi-hats. We iMessaged about this.
Draggy hi-hats,
but,
baby.
Ooh, I like them.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to
make beats, and I was just kind of feeling it out, and it. I'm proud of that first EP.
That's pocket. That's what they call that.
Put that right in the pocket.
Put that right in your pocket.
Yeah. It is one way to live. I was kind of the polar opposite of punk rock, though, so it didn't really... It was sort of a... It was a lot of mixed signals.
Sure. Well, there's a million ways to get it.
Coming right up.
Coming right up after we thank our sponsor, 16 Personalities, the only website where you can take this project test that you can take on any website.
Basically shaved on the sides
mm-hmm.
and then like combed over on the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a more professional Macklemore.
Mm-hmm. Or the alt-right, as they're calling it now.
And so for 3.5 years, I was getting my haircut just going in blind. And they would just kind of give me whatever haircut they thought I needed that day. Now, this brings us to our second point of, I feel like that we're taking things like sort of not in order of importance necessarily. I feel like maybe we should get the elephant out of the room. You
who brought this
the last time we spoke you were just a guy who was dating someone. Now you are a guy who is engaged to somebody.
That's true.
Would you like to speak about that? Is there anything you'd like to say about that?
Yeah. So there's a certain point where, like, when you've been dating someone for like more years than you can count on one hand, there's a lot of the sort of like mystery of like, will they, won't they, is kind of drained out of the situation, right? And it's more of a question of like, what is our like ontological understanding of what the institution of marriage is and what the institution of engagement is apart from the institution of marriage, and like, what kind of rings do we like, and like, where are we in our lives, and like, at what point is this going to happen? You know, that's the real question at a certain point. And I had, some time ago, for a reason that still, I have a hard time putting my finger on exactly why I made this decision, but a while ago, because Charlotte has sort of taken a long and meandering route through the college experience, which has involved transferring and switching majors and taking years off and stuff like that. And some time ago, I said to myself that I was not going to ask her to become my bride until she was finished with college. And I don't exactly remember the motivation behind that decision, but it seemed significant enough that I stuck to it. And then she graduated from college this December. I, knowing that she would do that, also planned a trip to Japan for the two of us for this January, which I leave for in 2 days. And I commenced to commission a ring. And so I really felt like I was project managing this whole thing very well.
Sure.
It was waterfall. It wasn't agile project management, right? It was very waterfall. Mm. A lot of things had to come together at a good time for us to hit the final deliverable. And what ended up happening is, as with all waterfall projects, some things changed. The requirements changed, and there were some early deliverables that were requested by the client. And so we had to switch on the fly from waterfall to agile, and we came up with a minimum viable product.
I see, and that's where you are now. So it's sort of get the minimum viable product out there. See
it's
kind
iterative.
Of how the client responds to it. See what kind of questions they have.
Yeah, very much so.
Get some kind of success manager involved.
So what happened is the way that the client gave us their feedback and requested changes. Was that the client asked me ahead of time whether I was planning on proposing in Japan, which really ruined my element of surprise. And if you know anything about me, it's the surprise. This element of surprise was very important to me. And the fact that it had been stripped away, even the affect of surprise would have been enough. Even if she was expecting it but didn't voice that expectation, I feel like we all could have sort of been like, oh, who knows what's going to happen? I don't know. Oh, we're in Japan. I wonder nothing's probably going to happen significant while we're here. And we all could have sort of stumbled our way through that darkness, but really come out with a strong deliverable at the end. But
would you describe that as maybe like the trough of sorrow? Was that where you were at the
very end? Much so. Or the valley of the shadow of death. But I fear no evil, and so I circled back. I made some adjustments to the plan, and I said to myself, you know what? They say that you can change price, you can change timeline, or you can change quality. You can change two of those things, but you can't change all three. I did a SWOT analysis, and what I came to find out was that the thing that my organization valued the most was the element of surprise. I scrapped the plan for proposing in Japan. I considered briefly proposing on an airplane with the help of a flight attendant announcing it, but then I considered the core values of the organization I was attempting to merge with,
sure,
and I thought that wouldn't be a culture fit.
You don't show up to the merger meeting wearing a merger t-shirt.
Exactly. It's a little on the nose. And so what the way that this ended up going down was I think like most great business over lunch. So I work from home. I was walking downstairs to go to lunch, and I had this ring that I had commissioned. And I said to myself, I'm a little bit tired of this ring burning a hole in my pocket and wondering when I'm going to use it.
You're like Frodo.
Yeah. And I just wanted to drop that shit off on Mount Doom, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That feels a little apocalyptic for what you're trying to,
right. Yeah, so I walked right down there. Not a Samwise Gamgee in sight.
No one to stop you. No one to help you.
No one to help me. No one to stop me. But I walked down there, and she said to me, could you bring me back some food when you go to lunch?
And I said, I got all the food you need right here.
I said, sure thing. Also, will you marry me? And the rest is for the lawyers.
Yeah, you know, when you're kind of harnessing human-centered design like that and kind of disrupting the social enterprise landscape, I feel like you run a few things like that up the ladder to a client like that. I feel like you get a real chance to kind of pre-accelerate the gamification of your influencer network. And I don't know.
It's
pretty exciting to find that kind of synergy.
Yeah. Well, and you really get to diversify your portfolio when it comes to, it's just really interesting when you see two cultures collide like that, right?
That's right.
And it's a merger of the cultures as well as a merger of the corporations.
Yeah, they call it a creative collision.
Is that, that's great. Creative collusion.